The Green Bay Packers beat the Atlanta Falcons on Monday Night Football, but what looked to be a blowout at halftime turned out to be a one-possession game by the end. What happened during the Falcons' furious comeback attempt? We'll find out with Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Stone, along with Alex Talich. We're talking some Packers football. We're talking about a game on Monday, the Monday Night Football game. Usually, we have an episode of Railbird Central the morning after a game, whether it's a Sunday game, whether it's a Thursday game. Our Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule here, we're usually able to talk the morning after. Atypical Tuesday, we had to wait all day Tuesday to talk, but anyway, we've got Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com waiting on the phone. Nathan, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Very good. Glad to have you as always. Now, the Packers won this game, but I feel, Nathan, we've got to start with the defensive collapse. Can you tell me who is at fault? Who were the culprits for letting Julio Jones have his record-setting performance, the most yards ever given up in a single game by an opposing wide receiver?
I would probably be easier to say who wasn't at fault. And Clinton Dix is the only defensive back who had at least a coverage snap who didn't allow a catch by Jones in this game. To pinpoint it on one person who had the worst game of all, it was Sam Shields. He had his worst coverage game of his career. He allowed three passes for 66 yards and a touchdown to Jones. There was that other pass where Shields was beaten coverage and Jones could have had the touchdown, but he wasn't aware that he was almost out of bounds, and that led to an incompletion. But that was another play where Shields graded poorly because he was beat on the play. But really, most of the defensive backs allowed one or two catches to Jones throughout the game, so the blame can be spread around throughout the defensive backfield.
Now, the Packers eventually rotated in Devon House for Sam Shields, and Devon House, I thought, held up fairly well, batting away a few passes for intended for Jones. Could you compare the performance of House and Shields over the whole season, not just on Monday?
Sure. Over the whole season, if you look at most metrics, House has outplayed Shields, including our PFF coverage rating. House has allowed a lower catch rate, has allowed a lower yards per catch, a fewer touchdowns allowed. The one thing that Shields does has the advantage is he has two interceptions to House's one, but House also has eight passes defended to Shields' five, and that's with House receiving fewer snaps, so fewer opportunities to defend passes. So the difference overall isn't too huge. There are plenty of opportunities throughout the league where a backup is outperforming a starter by a huge margin, and this is just a small one. And if Shields was playing not 100% due to his injury on this past game, that could also explain part of the difference. But however you look at it, we'd like to see Shields playing a little bit better based on how well he's played in the past and how much he's getting paid now. And House is playing well enough that you definitely want to keep him around for the Packers' future.
We do kind of give, or I do, give Shields a little bit of the benefit of doubt, seeing as he's coming off the concussion and didn't practice the majority of the week, but still not a good performance regardless. Nathan, the inside linebacker position has kind of undergone a transformation in Green Bay of late. Could you describe what the rotation looked like against the Falcons?
Sure. The rotation was completely based on the personnel the Packers were in. If the Packers were in their base defense with four defensive backs, it was A.J. Hawk and Sam Berenson at inside linebacker, and Matthews was on the outside in that kind of formation. In the nickel defense, which is what the Packers used the majority of the time, Matthews and Berenson were inside. And then the dime defense, which they use typically third and long situations, Brad Jones was the middle linebacker, and then Matthews was back outside in that formation. The base and nickel defense, that's exactly what we saw out of the Packers last week. And the dime defense with Brad Jones in there, it's the same thing they did against the Vikings just 2 weeks ago. So things that we've seen before, but never in this kind of combination. Also, linebackers are better playing against the pass than against the run. So I'm not completely sure what the logic is to who's playing in what defense at the time. I do think Jamari Lattimore is someone who is better against the run than he is against the pass. So if he does become healthy by the end of the season, I would like to see him get a chance a little bit in the base defense. But I'm not sure if they'll continue with this going forward since they've changed it up a little bit each of the past few weeks. But that's basically how they were used. It was completely dependent on the defensive formation the Packers were in.
I know some people remarked to me on social media that Julius Peppers was invisible on Monday Night Football game. But he finished, I know, as Pro Football Focus's highest graded player on defense. What led to his grade?
Sure. First off, since we initially posted the grades on the website, we put them through a review process, have more people look at the game. And since then, Pepper's grade has lowered a little bit. So still a positive grade out of him, but no longer the best one on the defense. Typically, you would like to see your edge defender do really well as a pass rusher. And he didn't have any sacks in this game. He didn't have, or he had one hit and two hurries, but that was all over 37 pass rushes. So as a pass rusher, he had a below average game in this one. So a little easier to see why people thought he was invisible, but he did end up having a really nice game against the run. He had a tackle for a short gain, two more where he shed the block of the Falcons tight end and ended up making a tackle there. Another play where he was able to shed a block, and then it forced the Falcons running back to go away from the initial point of the attack. So still a good play out of the defensive player, even though he wasn't the one to end up finishing off the play. So he had a couple of nice plays there, which ended up him having a positive grade in this one.
I think technically, you know, people get more, you know, they see the millions of dollars Julius Peppers getting and they want to see sacks. I think that's what people are upset about more than anything. But we're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Nathan, on the other side of the football, on offense, I thought the performance of Aaron Rodgers when he was blitzed was very impressive. Not that he was blitzed a lot. The Falcons played a lot of deep coverage there, cover two zone. But could you go a little bit more in depth on how he played under pressure?
Yeah, first off, he was excellent under pressure. It happened 12 times in the game where a defensive player was getting pressure on him. He was sacked once, and twice he ran with the ball. But on his 9 pass attempts, he completed 6 of those passes for 132 yards and 2 touchdowns. So he was almost better under pressure than he was not under pressure in this game, which is a little surprising to see at times. But in terms of specifically when he was blitzed, it wasn't very often since the Falcons, for the most part, just rushed with their 4 defensive linemen. Everyone else went back into coverage, but there were 6 times where they did bring a blitz. On those 6 times, he completed just 3 passes for 38 yards. So not excellent when he was blitzed, but it didn't happen very often either. So not a huge deal, but great game by Rodgers yet again.
Yeah, when he extends plays with his legs, whether he ends up passing or running, like he ran for 2 first downs, it's continues to amaze what he can do. I thought James Starks had his best outing in weeks. How did he do in relief of Eddie Lacy?
He had a few very impressive runs in this game. His touchdown was great. He had 2 players miss tackles on him. A good cut in there, another stiff arm. So very impressive run there. He had 2 other plays where he had first downs, had 2 other players miss tackles on him throughout the game. So overall, he only graded out a little above average because on half of his carries, it was a successful play for the defense. Two carries where he lost yards, two where he gained just a yard or two on first and 10, and then another third down carry where he wasn't able to convert it into a first down. But his numbers looked really good on his good runs, and that even though it was just on a few carries that he had good runs, but considering he had 10 rushing yards or fewer in each of his last five games, definitely his best game running the ball in a while.
Yeah, good job by Jim Starks, and I think a lot of people are thinking right now Eddie Lacy's taking a beating, and Jim Starks comes in with fresh legs, and that could be critical down the stretch. Nathan, the Packers go on the road for a game at Buffalo on Sunday. As usual, give us a preview of the Bills, but let's start with their defense, which appears to be that team's strength.
The Bills typically are one of the worst teams in the league over these past few years, but this year they've been doing really well, especially on defense, as you mentioned. Their defensive line is excellent. Mario Williams, Kyle Williams, Marcel Darius, and Jerry Hughes, all four of them have positive grades in both run defense and pass rushing. So they're going to give the Packers offensive line a really good challenge. So it'll be nice to see one of the best units going up against one of the best units in the league. Outside of their line, the three linebackers and their base defense are all good against the run. They have two good coverage players in cornerback Corey Graham and safety Denoris Searcy, both playing very well as well. Their only weaknesses are at slot cornerback. Nickell Robey has graded out negatively so far this year, so Randall Cobb could have a big game in this game if the Packers choose to take advantage of that. They also don't have a lot of depth on the defensive line, so there will be times where they'll substitute in their backup defensive linemen, especially if the Packers are able to have some long drives, and then they should be able to take advantage of it there with running the ball. On the other side of the field with the Bills on offense, Kyle Orton really hasn't been that much better than E.J. Manuel would have been, so they haven't had a huge improvement there. Sammy Watkins is getting a lot of attention, but he's getting a lot of yards just because he's getting targeted a ton, and he's really not, hasn't been that efficient this year. At running back, Fred Jackson is very good considering how old he is, so he's probably the one player to worry about the most, but it will probably be one of those games where the goal is score over 20 points and hold your opponent to just under 20 points, and that's probably what it'll take to get a victory.
Yeah, I could definitely see that happening. Interesting that Kyle Orton has had success against the Packers in the past, albeit not with the Bills, so it'll be fun to watch that matchup. Nathan, we'll talk to you about this game next week. As usual, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
All right, take care. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us as he does every Wednesday here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central. My thoughts on the recently completed game, like I said, kind of have to wait 2 days post-mortem here for the Packers review. My thoughts, and Nathan was just kind of talking about this, talking about the good Bills defensive line. I thought on Monday night against the Falcons, the Packers' offensive line was once again superb, and it has been this way for several weeks, pretty much ever since the bye. And you could kind of go back even as far back as the third game of the season when Brian Bulaga returned from that injury. He missed, what was it, the first very first two games of the season and has been back ever since. And really, I think you're just seeing growing continuity on the Packers' offensive line pretty much every game thereon forward, but especially since the bye. The Packers' offensive line has been just amazing, and I personally thought TJ Lang played a terrific game. I know he had the holding penalty, and he was kind of had a little bit trouble on a few rushes there with his defender, but there were times when TJ Lang was absolutely dominating his opponent and getting pancake blocks out there, and just, you know, his scrappiness and his effort is just really remarkable, especially when you consider the guy he basically took over from, Darren College, who is kind of a, you know, we've talked about this well in the past, kind of a finesse offensive lineman, more or less. Not that Darren College was a bad offensive lineman, but the difference in physicalness to a guy like TJ Lang, who's a little bit, I think, beefier, a little bit more physical. It's definitely remarkable, and I thought he played fantastic. And on top of that, I think it's interesting too, you know, right, it was the last game before the bye there that both TJ Lang and Josh Sitton were injured in the Saints game. TJ Lang with the sprained ankle, Josh Sitton with the torn ligament in his big toe. And it looked like the first game back from the bye, those guys really gutted it out, grittiness. They kind of, you know, maybe struggled a little bit with not being full health. Not that they played badly, but I think, you know, those first game or two after the injury, you could tell they were limited, Josh Sitton and TJ Lang. But it seems like with every passing week here too, they are just getting more healthy. Those injuries are in the rearview mirror, and those guys are playing together. And when, you know, they are once again one of the best tandems of guards in the NFL. I felt early in the season, maybe it wasn't that way, but it's getting to be that again. And just the whole offensive line, Corey Linsley, the more he plays, the better he looks as a rookie. You know, even those early on, it seemed like there was a few rookie mistakes here and there, and even ones you could live with. But man, the past few weeks, the mistakes by Corey Linsley are growing ever increasingly fewer. Brian Bulaga's getting more healthy since that early season injury. I think he's playing great. David Bakhtiari did struggle a little bit in this game. But by and large, you can live with what he's doing. That's an understatement. He's doing very well. Just gave up that one sack there and a few more pressures. But, he's playing by and large very well for the Packers. To kind of take it from there, I think the performance here of the Packers offensive line versus the Bills defensive line will be the matchup to watch this upcoming Sunday, as the Packers have a short turnaround. Next game just 6 days later, as opposed to the usual seven. And that's going to be fun to watch the Packers offensive line go up against the likes of Mario Williams, the former number one overall draft pick in the NFL draft, Marcell Dareus, a former first round draft pick. These kind of guys, that's going to be very, very fun to watch. And it's not going to be an easy task for this Packers offensive line, but thankfully they just seem to be getting better every week. They're meeting them at the perfect time, the Packers offensive line, as opposed to maybe early in the season. Getting them now, the Packers will be more apt to handle them. On the other side of the football, and we broke this down with Nathan Jahnke, the Packers secondary looked absolutely terrible, I thought, on Monday night against the Falcons, especially against Julio Jones, who I said had that record-setting performance. I think it was 259 yards. The most gain, most yards receiving a Packers opponent has ever had in a single game in history. And that was terrible. It was bad. And we talked about it. Sam Shields seemed to be most at fault. But it's as if every player was at fault at one time or another over the course of the game. Casey Hayward gives up a touchdown late. Even Devon House gives up the big to Julio Jones. Although Devon House played well, had the two broken up passes, also gave up the big one at the end. Tremon Williams giving up the 79-yard pass, the guy who maybe played the best in the secondary, Morgan Burnett, with his interception. That 79-yard gain on Tremont Williams should not have been 79 yards because Morgan Burnett took a terrible angle on that play. It should have been cut in half to, you know, from what was an 80-yard gain practically to only about 40. You know, so everybody was at fault. And ha-ha Clinton Dix, it seems like every game now the guy has two missed tackles. And it just, it's, you know, everybody was at fault. Micah Hyde, he got her couch chip performance at Cheesehead TV in the aftermath of the game, giving up a touchdown, a long gain to Julio Jones. He actually ends up getting pulled at one point late in the game. Not exactly pulled, but demoted, I guess. Casey Hayward ended up taking over the nickel position late in the game while Micah Hyde played the dime. So, everybody in the secondary, you know, was at fault at one time or another, and it just looked bad. It looked terribly bad. And you know, part of it was due to the reason there was no pass rush. And I think people point to, yeah, Julius Peppers, he's getting paid millions of dollars and offered no pass rush. I think the even worse performance was from the Packers' defensive line offering nothing out there. Mike Daniels had one of his worst games of the season. LaTroy Guyon, with the exception of his one tip and near interception, outside of that one play, you know, he had a bad game. Dayton Jones offered very little. There might have been a pressure here or there by Jones, but for as many snaps as he's played, and I think Dayton Jones played his most snaps since that ankle injury at midseason, you know, considering the amount of snaps he played, did not get enough pressure on the quarterback. So not a good job by the Packers defensive line. That's not to take you know, attention away from the linebackers, who didn't exactly do a great job either. Although Clay Matthews got the one pressure, the one sack of the game, got a little bit of pressure, but still perhaps maybe not enough. And when you're not getting pressure, that just allows Matt Ryan to sit back in the pocket and find guys like Julio Jones. And then the secondary looks exposed, as they did on Monday Night Football. So that was definitely disappointing to see, and a disappointment. Special teams, you know, this goes under the radar here, just as special teams always does. But man, I gotta say, the Packers special teams looks like shit lately. and you know, they deserve to be called out. The blocked extra point, the Packers now have given up five blocks this season. Two punts, two extra points, and one field goal. That is pathetic. That is very, very pathetic. And, you know, not only is just special teams overlooked in general, but I think, you know, here's a season in which the Packers' offense is so good, they're barely punting. You know, Tim Maste has, what, only one punt on Monday night, and that practically got blocked. And you do kind of wonder a little bit, like, hey, they are punting so little. Is that due to, you know, not doing it much? I mean, there's not that much practice at it during a game when you're only out there once a game or so, you know. So it's bad, and you know, kickoffs to an extent are, you know, have become marginalized as the kickoff was moved up to the 35-yard line, and but I mean, so early in the season, you know, lots and lots of touchbacks. But as it gets, you know, sub-freezing temperatures here and the ball doesn't travel as far, now all of a sudden, come late in the year in cold weather games, the kickoff becomes more important again. And the Packers not really, I mean, kudos to them. They're not really, you know, giving up huge gains on kickoff returns. Holding Devin Hester to what they did this past Sunday was commendable. But still, you know, they I think they're getting out-returned by their opponents. DeJuan Harris has done really nothing special all year long on a kick return. I'm waiting to see, you know, at least like a 40-yard return or two by DeJuan Harris. It seems like everything is just out to the 20, if that. So the Packers and special teams really, really poor lately. They got to step up here. They got to start stepping up. And, you know, if nothing else in the protection department, I mean, five blocks is terrible, terrible, terrible. Five blocks in a season, and we still got three games left here. So the Packers have to clean that up. The one block coming, by the way, between Josh Boyd and Lane Taylor on, you know, the extra point protection unit. You got to perhaps wonder if the Packers, ever since these injuries to TJ Lang and Josh Sitton, they've taken them out on protection units. And as they get healthy, you got to wonder if it's time for them to go back. Because, I mean, how many of these are you going to allow? I mean, I'm all about, you know, giving an opportunity to Josh Sitton and TJ Lang to show, you know, take them out of play occasionally and, you know, a little bit less wear and tear on them. But at some point, you got to be like, well, the guys out there aren't cutting it. You know, you got Josh Boyd blocking on extra points. You know, he's not an offensive player. He's not a guy who's, you know, really knows the ins and outs of blocking. Although you would think after several weeks here, he would be getting better at it. That's gotta be, you know, getting better at some point. But anyway, so there's your game review. Now it's time for
Packers news of the day.
Yesterday, the past 24-hour news cycle, not a whole lot as we're still kind of in the aftermath of the Monday Night Football game. Couple nominations yesterday. First of all, Aaron Rodgers being nominated for the NFL's Air Player of the Week, along with, I believe it's Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger and fellow divisional quarterback Matthew Stafford of the Detroit Lions. The winner of that is announced on Thursday. So Aaron Rodgers nominated for his 300-plus yard passing performance against the Falcons. And, you know, as we talked about with Nathan Jahnke earlier in the show, what a performance that was. Aaron Rodgers typically, as he is, good on Monday night. And the other news from yesterday, Packers wide receiver Jordy Nelson nominated for the inaugural NFL Sportsmanship Award. Congratulations to Jordy Nelson. He is the Packers representative. There are 32 nominees across the NFL, one from each team. One player eventually will be selected. This will be saying they'll be recognized on the annual NFL Honors televised award show the night before the Super Bowl. Whether or not Jordy Nelson becomes a finalist for that award or not, we have yet to see. But congratulations for being nominated, and we'll see if he ends up winning. Here we are on a Wednesday morning. The Packers have a short turnaround this week and
the day ahead.
What'll happen today at 1265 Lombardi Avenue in Green Bay? It appears as if, you know, in a normal week, the Packers would hold their first practice on Wednesday. And it's usually a full-fledged practice, kind of the one day of the week where they might get the most work in of any day of the week. Coming off a typical Sunday game, they basically get Monday and Tuesday off, not to say they're not doing things on those days. But then they get back to work, at length on Wednesdays. And coming off the Monday Night Football game, they're basically, I know they'll be working today on Wednesday, but they may not be holding a full-fledged practice. And kind of waiting to see what the status of Eddie Lacy is. Part of the reason James Starks got such a heavy workload at the end, Eddie Lacy kind of suffered a hip injury And Mike McCarthy addressed that at his press conference on Tuesday. Here's what Mike McCarthy had to say for Lacey and what's in store for today.
Frankly, all of our guys will be in the morning. I don't have high concern based off the information talking to Dr. McKenzie last night. But, you know, coming off a Monday night game, you know, tomorrow will be, you know, a lot like a Tuesday. So we'll see how these guys go through their examinations.
So that's Mike McCarthy on Eddie Lacy. The Packers will release their first injury report of the week on Wednesday, even though they may not have a full-fledged practice, like I said. So some of these things may be an estimation of what they think they would do, as the Packers tend to do when they don't hold practice, like, you know, pretty much every Friday in your typical schedule. They don't really practice. They just kind of hold a walkthrough, and then they kind of give an estimation. But waiting to see if Eddie Lacy takes part or not. He's listed as did not participate, or listed as limited, or listed as full. We'll find out. It's good that Mike McCarthy said he doesn't have high concern, but the short turnaround does give you a little bit of pause and wonder, oh man, you know, Packers don't have their usual amount of rest as they normally do in preparation for coming off a Monday night football game. Now you got to go on the road. Heck, you would have liked it when, you know, coming off a Monday night game that they have their next game at home. But the Packers don't have that luxury this week. Playing their first game in Buffalo, by the way, since 1994. Can you believe that? Packers haven't played in Buffalo since 1994. That's a long time ago. I couldn't believe that when I saw that this week. But that'll do it for today's episode. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. Thank you to Nathan Yonke for joining us, as he does every Wednesday here at Cheesehead TV, as we have a show every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time here at Cheesehead TV. Our call to action, please, folks, give us a review on iTunes if you have not already. I know I ask for this from time to time, but it's the one thing we ask in what is a free podcast and free content at Cheesehead TV, whereas a lot of sites are behind a paywall or have subscriptions. We do not, and we ask that, you know, just do us the small thing. Go to iTunes, give us a rating. It helps get the word out and helps, I think, fellow Packer fans find us when they see lots of reviews, lots of ratings, things like that for our show. So please do that. But we'll talk to you again on Friday, 2 days from now, 8:30 a.m. Central Time. So we'll talk to you then. On behalf of Jamie Snow and Alex Talchin, Brian Kirvo, on behalf of everybody at Cheesehead TV, we'll see you later. I leave you today with a song called Simple Gift of Man by Brothers Past on Psi Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.